Judges chapter 13, I want to read to you two verses at the end of the chapter, but we're actually going to cover chapters 14, 15, and 16 this morning as well. Don't worry, I know that sounds like we're doing 3 hours of messages today. No, I promise you it'll be a regular sized message, but we cover a lot of ground. Judges chapter 13, verses 24 and 25, it says, "And the woman bare a son and called his name Samson. And the child grew, and the Lord blessed him. And the Spirit of the Lord began to move him at times in the camp of Dan between Zorah and Eshtaol." Whenever I mention the word Samson, what is the first word that comes to your mind? Strong, strength. Hopefully nobody said ice cream from the skit this morning. But you know, when we talk about Samson, so often it's like strong. And strength is the idea, and rightfully so. This was a man who was supernaturally endued with physical powers that were absolutely amazing. But here's the irony, young people, that you need to understand about Samson. Though he was very strong, he was also very weak. Matter of fact, I heard one commentator, John Butler, if you can ever get your hands on any biographical sketch that a man named John Butler wrote, you need to get it. They're outstanding. But you know what he termed Samson as? He termed Samson as the strong man who was weak. And I know we look at that and we say, boy, that just doesn't make sense. Well, when you read the life of Samson, you understand that Samson had weaknesses that destroyed him. You know, whenever I go out for camp every summer, I'm usually in 3 or 4 weeks of camps. You learn as a camp evangelist, you've got to be well-schooled in ping pong and in foosball. I love playing foosball with kids that think they're going to rake me over the coals. And sometimes in playing ping pong, when they've never seen me play, you know, you do that thing where you're warming up. And you're warming up playing ping pong and a lot of times I like to, if I hit the ball over, I hit it without bouncing it on my side of the table, just hit it on their side. And I'm like, no, Brother Beal, when you serve, it has to hit your side of the table. I'm like, oh, okay, all right. And, you know, and then you hold the paddle awkwardly and you just sort of stab at it and you're like, oh, man, I can't, And you just sort of do that for like 5 minutes and finally the kid feels sorry for you. He's like, okay, let's just get this on and get it over with. And then he's like, I'll tell you what, I'll let you serve first. And then I hold the ball and the paddle a certain way. And man, I go after them, like, whoa, 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 whoa. I didn't think you could play. But you know, one of the things when you're warming up with somebody in ping pong, the thing that I don't like is I don't like warming up with somebody and I know they're trying to find out what my weakness is. I hate it when I'm warming up with someone and they always constantly hit it to my backhand side. And the reason why is because I'm divulging to you right now what my weakness is. It is a backhand shot. My backhand shot is like a girl, okay? Now, for some of you girls, you take offense and you're like, well, my backhand shot's like a boy then, and I'll just degrade you. I can't hit it. It's like I have two left hands when I'm trying to hit it with a backhand. I can do it, but it doesn't come like this. It's sort of like, you know. And I hate that when they're doing that, when they're warming up with me, because I know what they're doing. They're figuring out, okay, where does he stink? And then what ends up happening is to compensate for my weakness, then I stand even farther off the table, and then they smack it way over here, and I'm like, oh, you know, there's just nothing I can do. You know, none of us really like to talk about our weaknesses. None of us really like to, you know, pull those out for everybody to see. But listen to me, Samson had some weaknesses that destroyed him, and those same weaknesses destroy people today. Let me remind you, Samson was a person that God wanted to use greatly. He was a member of this class of people called the judges. All right? You said people with black robes and gavels? No. these judges in the Old Testament, they were meant to deliver Israel. They were to do a mighty work. So why am I pointing that out about Samson? I'm going to tell you why. Because I think you could equivocate Samson with young people that are in this room who want to serve the Lord. Did you know that a Camp Barnabas camper can be destroyed by having their own way? And so I want you to see several things about Samson, and I want to ask you, what is your weakness? What are the things before you came to camp that you know very definitely, yep, these are weaknesses in my heart, and if you find out there's a weakness there, the worst thing you can do is do this. Just ain't going to talk about it. Because the longer you don't talk about it and the longer you don't realize it, the closer you are to destruction. And Samson is a prime example of it. So let's begin by first of all seeing Samson's devotion in Judges 13 verses 24 and 25. Now I'm not going to stay very long here. But we find that Samson was raised in a God-fearing home. And in the early days, Samson knew what it meant to be used of the Lord. The Bible says the Spirit of the Lord moved him at times in his youth. You could say that Samson got started off on the right foot. He was raised in a good home. He even knew what it was like to be used of the Lord. And you know what? I believe I'm looking at a sea of young people this morning. Many of you, listen, you've been raised in the right way. You've been raised up in church. You're in good churches. And you know, you've even seen times in your life where even as a teenager, you've been used of the Lord, where you've been able to serve the Lord. You've been able to do things to honor and to glorify Him. But listen to me, you can do that and still mess up like Samson. Yeah, I've often heard people say this. They say, you know what, it's not how you start, but it's how you finish. Young people, there are many of you that are off to a great start right now. Your parents have taught you right. They've guided you in the right way. But did you know there comes a point where you're either going to embrace what you've been taught or you're going to push it away. And I've seen people who were Camp Barnabas campers in the past push it away. They were weak. They refused to deal with what was in their hearts. And so you understand what's at risk. Samson's devotion, raised in a God-fearing home, had great potential. He knew what it was like to be used of the Lord in the early part of his life. You say, boy, this guy has a great future. And then you see how he died. Chapter 16, his eyes are plucked out. People are laughing at him. And finally, he pushes two pillars aside and everything collapses on Samson. He basically commits suicide and kills all of his enemies in the process. That's a sad way to go. How did that happen? First of all, you see Samson's devotion, but here's how it happened. Number two, Samson's decisions. You know, sometimes when I'm reading the Bible, I love reading narratives. When I'm talking about narratives, I'm talking about stories. Man, I'd love to have been there when David and Goliath went at it in the Valley of Elah. I've gotten to stand in the Valley of Elah, but I would love to see Goliath bearing down on David, and he's about to kill him, and David lets that stone loose, and the Bible says that Goliath fell forward dead. You say, you know, why did he fall forward? If somebody hit me in the rock with a rock, I'd be falling backwards. I think Goliath was charging after David, and I think that big frame was just hunched over, about ready to kill him, and the next thing you know, hit him right there, and Goliath only had one way to go, and that was forward. That was the way he was charging. But sometimes I read narratives, I read stories, and something bad's about to happen, and I'm reading it, and I'm like, oh no, don't do that. No, don't do that. That's exactly how I feel when I read Judges 14, 15, and 16. Samson gets into a situation, he's about to do something stupid, and I say, oh, no, 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 no. And what it is Samson makes decision after decision that eventually leads to his destruction. How do you get from great potential, being raised in a Christian home and being a Camp Barnabas camper, and know what it's like to serve the Lord, to where your life is ruined and destroyed and sent to a premature death. This is how it happens. Decisions. You make them every day. But let me give you several decisions that Samson made that led to his destruction. And I'm going to tell you something, young people, they will lead to your destruction too. Decision number one is he made the decision for a Philistine wife. In chapter 14, verse 1, the Bible says, "And Samson went down to Timnath and saw a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. And he came up and told his father and his mother and said, 'I have seen a woman in Timnath of the daughter of the Philistines. Now therefore get her for me to wife.'" Can I tell you, dating must have been a little bit different back then than now. Here at the college, we do have dating rules. We believe that men and women ought to conduct themselves very appropriately and in a godly fashion, one towards another. In a dating relationship, we have rules. We, as a matter of fact, if a student wants to go out on a date with somebody, we want to know how mom and dad feels about it. And if mom and dad are like, mm-mm, veto, then we're like, oh, you know, you guys can't go off campus and have a date with a chaperone, because we just, if mom and dad aren't for it, then we're not for it. But could you imagine if the dating at Ambassador took place this way? Opening day, freshman is walking down the hall with his parents. And all of a sudden, somebody catches his eye. And he says, "Dad, her. Go fetch her for me." Our enrollment would drop. Now, the truth is, we'd probably have a lot of guys here and no girls. The guys are like, "That's the only way I can get one, if Dad gets her for me." And the girls are like, "You can forget that, because I know it'd be a person as ugly as sin look at me and say, 'I, Dad, that's who I..." And I'm like, "No, I am not. I don't want that." But, you know, it'd be very easy to get really caught up and be like, "Whoa, I can't believe he said, 'Dad, fetch me.'" I mean, it's like that's just not right. That's not good. Well, that's the way culturally that it may have been done. It may have been initiated. But listen, aside from the methodology that was used, here's something that was more important. Samson made a bad mistake because he wanted a Philistine wife. Now, later on, you're going to see in the passage that God takes this inordinate desire that Samson had, and he still manages to use it in Samson's life. But listen, he set his eyes on a Philistine wife when that was something that was expressly forbidden. As a matter of fact, the parents say, "Samson, look at all the chicks here in Israel. I mean, come on. You know, I mean, is there not one in the daughters of Israel?" But you know, Samson's heart was fixed. And it was fixed on a person that he had no business being with. This person is unregenerate, not a follower of Jehovah. And yet Samson's heart overruled what he knew was right. And you know what? That happens to a lot of young people too. Hey, you know what I think would be a good idea for you right now, even at the grand old age of 13? Some of you guys are like, "I'm 13. My voice hasn't even changed yet. I still play with Legos. I'm not thinking about getting married." But you know what, teenager? You better make up your mind now, some general parameters of what you're going to do, who you're going to marry. And I'm not talking about specifics. Let me tell you, there's one thing I can tell you for every Christian teenager in here. It's not God's will for you to marry a lost person. So you're like, "I need to pray about it." No, you don't. If your parents tell you, "Clean up your room," you say, "I got to pray about it." I don't think that's good. There's just some things you don't have to pray about. And the reason why is because if it's been said expressly, then you do it. when it comes to obeying authority, when it comes to obeying the Lord's authority. But you know what? There have been young people whose hearts have overruled their what their parents have taught them, and they made the decision for a wrong spouse, and it ruined their lives. I'd go a step further, and I would say, you know what? You shouldn't just marry a lost person, but you ought not marry a carnal person who just has a carnal lifestyle, because I'm telling you, if some things don't change and you're that way, it's a lot of misery. It's a lot of sorrow. But have you ever thought about that? Have you ever put your flag in the ground and said, you know what, here's a boundary I'm not going to cross? You might ought to draw that boundary now, because when you emotionally get caught up in it then, that's not the time to make the decision. How was Samson ruined? In part, he was ruined because he made the decision for a Philistine wife when he had no business doing it. We had a young man who was a student back in the late 90s. I was a dormitory supervisor then. He was a young man from Eastern North Carolina, and the White House that's right across the street from the college used to be a men's dormitory. And this young man had a nickname his freshman year. His nickname was Solomon. And it was not because of the wisdom part. And in his second semester, he had gotten yoked up with a young lady from Utah. And I'm not against Utah, but I mean, this girl came and visited the campus, and it was obvious she was not in the same orbit. But he was just enamored with her. And I remember one day I sat with him on the front steps. I think about this from time to time. When I walk home down Ruth Drive, I live just down the neighboring road, and I'll drive through Ruth, or I'll walk through Ruth Drive. Every time I walk by that porch, or I should say many times I walk by that porch, I'm reminded of this conversation where I sat him down and I just bore my heart with him for about 30 minutes. And I said, I called him by name and I said, "This isn't right." And he pretty much looked at me and shrugged me off and said, "I'm going to do what I want to do." I said, "All right." He didn't come back the following semester, and it was a few years later when email was really starting to catch on. It was in the, you know, email was becoming more and more popular. Lo and behold, I get this email and I look at the address, and it almost took my breath away because it was this young man. And in that email, the young man wrote me. He said, "You know," he said, "right now I'm in the military." He said, I'm serving our country. But he said, "I just wanted to tell you, do you remember that conversation we had on the front steps of that White House?" He said, "I wish to God I would have listened." He said, after I left college, eventually myself and this young lady got married. And he said, "You know what?" He said, "Now she's divorced me." And he said, "My ministry hopes are shot." And you know what it was? It was just simply him wanting to have his own way. Young people, put your flags in the ground and say, there's just some boundaries right now that I'm not going to cross, and one of them is to marry an unsaved person, or an ungodly person for that matter. So number one, the first decision he makes is for a Philistine wife. The second decision he makes is for honey. Some of you are like, "Oh, this guy's preaching against health food." No. It's not so much what he ate, but in the manner in which he ate it. And, well, actually, I'd have to say it is sort of why the fact that he ate it too, but there's something unusual to Samson that may not be to you. Notice with me in Judges 14, verse 8. "And after a time, he returned to take her, and he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion, and behold, there was a swarm of bees and honey in the carcass of the lion." Now, let's stop for just a moment. He's coming back now, and he's passing through, and he sees the carcass, all right? That's like the dead remains of a lion. And he sees honey in that carcass, and he's going to take the honey out of that carcass. Now, before we talk about what he did, why was there a carcass there? Because when Samson was going his way there, Samson, he's walking, and all of a sudden a huge lion comes out. Could you imagine walking with Samson and all of a sudden this huge lion comes out and he's just like, "Roar!" And Samson, The Bible tells us in the previous verses, he rent or he ripped the lion apart. I mean, just like here's an arm, boom, right off, a leg rather. Here, I mean, he just tore the animal apart with his bare hands. This is a feat of supernatural strength as he's endued by God, and he just leaves the remains there. He doesn't dig a grave, he just throws it down and goes on his way. But then as he's on his way back, the bees have nested in there, and he reaches down and he takes this honey and he eats it. Some of you are like, okay, what is the big bad deal here? I mean, he ate honey. I like honey. And honey is natural. It's better than that high fructose corn syrup that you drink in those sodas. You know. Do you know back when I was a kid, they used pure cane sugar in sodas? Now it's high fructose corn syrup. Yuck. But anyway, some of you will drink it anyway. But anyhow, Samson's eating this honey. You say honey is a good thing. All right, listen to me. Here's the thing that you overlook. Did you know that when Samson was little, upon him was a Nazirite vow? And one of the parts of that Nazirite vow was that you did not touch an unclean or a dead thing. So when Samson eats this honey, he violates a vow that is made to God. But notice with me in verse 9. It says, and he took thereof in his hands and went on eating and came to his father and mother, and he gave them, now here it is, and they did eat, but he told not them that he had taken the honey out of the carcass of the lion. Do you think Samson just forgot? That action reveals to me Samson knew what he did. Samson had crossed a line that his parents, I'm sure, had told him was there, but he conveniently did not tell his parents where that honey came from. Why? Because it would have incriminated him. Now, young people, look this way, and let me give you a little piece of advice. When you withhold things from your parents, it's probably a pretty good indicator that you're in the wrong. Unless it's your mom's surprise birthday party. You know, there may be some of you in this room, you hold back a lot from your parents. Now, I can't force you to tell your parents anything, but I'll tell you what I can tell you. I can tell you that if you live that way, you're probably living a lot like Samson. If you're living a life of secrets, you don't want them to see what's on your cell phone. You don't want them to see who's on your WhatsApp. You don't want them to see who you're corresponding with on some social media platform. Can I tell you, if that's the case, it ought to flash red lights to you. Hey, I am wrong. But there are people that live that way. They can live lies during their entire teenage years. They've hidden so much from mom and dad. And all I say to you is you better be careful, because what happened to Samson may happen to you. Samson said, I want honey. I want a Philistine wife. He was saying, I want what my flesh wants more than what the Bible spells out. And it destroyed him. Number one, he made a mistake. He made a decision for a Philistine wife. He made a decision for honey. Number three, he made a decision for immorality. Young people, we live in a very sexualized world. The world makes sacred things so common and perverts them. Samson lived loosely in his life, and it ended up in chapter 16 and verse number 1. The Bible says, then went Samson to Gaza and saw there a harlot and went in unto her. Samson had an immoral relationship. Here was a man who chose a Philistine wife, and now he's living in immorality. How does it happen? How does it happen that somebody who comes from Camp Barnabas 20 years later, their lives are in a ditch? Because they make a decision to fulfill their flesh rather than to obey the Word of God, and it leads him now to immorality. You know, every road leads somewhere. Even a road that has a dead end. And what road are you on right now? And I want to ask you, where will it lead you to? His pursuit of physical pleasure was stronger than his pursuit of God. That was Samson's problem, and it led to his downfall. Now, before I get to the last thing, let me remind you of what Samson did when he was empowered by the Spirit of God. Samson killed a lion with his bare hands. That'd be cool. You know, Seth Hankey's one of the smaller ones in here. Could you imagine walking through the woods with Seth and a huge lion just jump out, and Seth just throws his fist right into it and kills it with a heart punch? You're like, yeah, listen, Samson, I mean, you compare any human being with a lion and it's no contest. He kills a lion with his bare hands. He kills 30 men of Ascalon, and he kills 1,000 Philistines with the jawbone of an animal. No nunchucks, no guns, but he takes the jaw of an animal and kills 1,000 people with it. And all of that happens not because he's so strong, but because God has empowered him. And before it's over with, he throws it all away and he's destroyed. Number one, Samson's devotion. Number two, Samson's decisions. And let me just say again, if you're here and you have the practice of withholding things from your parents because you know that you're wrong, listen to me, Samson ought to speak volumes to you. But then number three, I want you to see Samson's destruction. Judges 16 has to be one of the most aggravating passages of Scripture to me, if I can say that reverently. I'm aggravated not because God wrote it, I'm aggravated at Samson. I don't have the time to read it to you, but four times Samson is with this woman named Delilah, and four times she says, Samson, what's the secret of your strength? She comes up to him and she says, Samson, what's the secret of your strength? And Samson says, well, if you'll tie my hair with 7 green withs, I'll lose my strength. Delilah's like, really? He's like, yeah. And then she says, go to sleep. Go to sleep. Go to sleep, little Samson. Go to sleep. And about the time he is sawing logs, she looks at her Philistine companions and says, psst, come here. He said, if you tie his hair with 7 green withs, he loses his strength. They go to work. And then the alarm clock goes off. You want to know what the alarm clock sounded like? It didn't sound anything like yours. Here's how Samson's alarm clock sounded. Samson, the Philistines are upon thee! He's bound up and he's like, I don't know what Delilah's reaction was, but it had to be something like, now, I'm going to tell you, at that point in the game, I would have just sort of thought Samson would be like, huh, I know what you're doing. I mean, you know, if I'm like, what part of your body, if I hit, would make you cry the hardest? And you're like, well, right in the nose. And I went, wham! And I said, now, where do you keep your money? You'd be like, I'm not answering another question you're asking me. But she comes to him a second time. Samson, what's the secret of your strength? Well, if you tie me with new ropes, I'll lose my strength. Go to sleep. Go to sleep. Go to sleep, little Samson. She has him tied with 7 new ropes. The alarm clock goes off again. It's not, wah, wah, wah. Samson, the Philistines are upon thee. The third time, Samson, what is the secret of your strength? You know, I could give him a pass after the first time he's dense. But after the second time, I'm like, really? He says, if you tie my hair, weave it into a web. Weavest my hair in the web, I'll lose my strength. Same repeat. Same alarm clock. He breaks out of it again 3 times. Why in the world could Samson not figure it out after 3 times? I'm going to tell you why. Listen. I was raised in a household where my dad drank heavily. There were times where I could watch my dad. He would drink every day. And there were times where my dad, even at the age of 50-some years old, would lack the thinking ability of a child because he was so inebriated. He couldn't think through things. He was incapacitated. I'd seen it. Why? Because he was drunk with alcohol. But do you know what I've seen through the years? I've seen young people, they weren't drunk with alcohol. You know what they were drunk with? They were so drunk with lust, they couldn't see what the obvious was. There may be some of you, you'll never touch a drop of alcohol, and I hope you never do. I hope you never touch a drop of beverage alcohol. The Bible gives strong prohibitions about that, and also when you see strong drink mentioned in the Old Testament, any alcoholic beverage that you have today would qualify as strong drink. Because it is so much more potent than even just ordinary fermentation because it's intensified. And so I have no sympathy at all for these preachers and for these churches that encourage people to drink beverage alcohol because I believe it's expressly forbidden on the principles in the Old Testament and the New, but that's just a sermon for another day. Let me tell you something, young people. You may never touch a drop of alcohol, but you can be so intoxicated with your own lust and what you desire that you can't see the obvious. And that's exactly what happened to Samson. The fourth time comes, and now Delilah sort of guilts him a little bit. If you love me, you tell me. Now, let me say something. Girls aren't the only ones that say that. You know what? Boys say that sometimes. And girls, if boys say that to you, that's where I would just say slap them. Go ahead. Physical contact is permitted. Boy, if you loved me. And now Samson, he just melts. And Samson says, all right, if you cut my hair, I lose my strength. You know, the other 3 times he wakes up and he's like, I wonder how Samson must have felt when he woke up the 4th time and he flexes and nothing happens. You want to talk about crossing a line? At that point, Samson has to realize I've messed up. Now, there's some of you here this morning, I'm trying to keep you from getting to that point. Don't even get bound to start with. How helpless he must have felt. And then the Bible tells us later on that he was maimed physically. They plucked his eyes out. He was an object of scorn. His testimony was ruined. The enemy rejoiced. They blasphemed God. They mocked Samson. And eventually Samson would go to a premature grave. You know, we talk about the death of Samson, guys who are filled with the adoration for violence and gore, they're like, that's pretty cool. Man, I think that's pretty cool. He's standing there and he puts his hand on one pillar and another, and he's been letting his hair like secretly grow back. And of course, guys dramatize it. They're like, I bet you got up there and was just like, Rah! And he pushes those pillars and it kills all those people. You're like, whoa, man, that was pretty cool. No, it wasn't cool. And I'm going to tell you why. Because you know what? If Samson had lived for God and he had done what he was supposed to for God, he would have done far more damage to the enemy than he did that day. The man basically committed suicide. And even then, it wasn't because he was repentant as much as he was so vengeful towards the Philistines. He said, if they're going to do this to me, I'm going to do this to them. It wasn't necessarily he was thinking about God's glory. He was thinking about his own self-vindication. Hey, how do you get, man, raised in a Christian home? You've been exposed to the Bible. And, man, you're even doing something for God as a teenager. How do you get from here to here? Your eyes are plucked out. People laugh at you. You're a shell of the person that you used to be. And people hate God even more because of you. How do you get there to here? Decisions. Decisions that you may be making right now. I want to ask you, what is your weakness? Years ago, I read a story about a bridge in Minnesota. It was on I-35. It was 2007. There was a bridge that was 1,900 feet long that collapsed. Can you imagine? Some of you are like, now it's freaking me out. Every time I'm on a bridge, I'm like, but this bridge was 1,900 feet long and it collapsed. There were 145 people injured. I think 13 died. And 8 lanes of traffic just whoosh, collapsed. They wondered why that happened. And they went back and they did a study and they found that in years prior, that bridge had been inspected. And those bridge inspections years prior, the reports had words like this, structural fatigue, fatigue cracks. These warnings went as far back as 1990, 17 years prior. People were saying, warning, 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 and 17 years later, that bridge collapsed. Young people, are you sitting here this morning and God's saying, warning, 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 and it's only a matter of time before the destruction comes? I'm glad that you're at this camp. I'm glad you have a desire to serve the Lord. I'm glad that in times past maybe you've been used of the Lord. But listen to me, if you have some weaknesses, you better hit them head on now so that you can do God's will in the years to come.